You ready?
Yeah.
You ready? All right. Hold on. Here we go.
Welcome to the My Aggie Nation podcast. In this week's episode, we have a little one-on-one with men's basketball standout DJ Hoag. Get into the mind of the sharpshooter for the A&M basketball team. We will also discuss what is going on with that basketball team and just basically try to solve all of the basketball problems that are plaguing A&M right now. And we're going to get a little bit more into a little bit of TV talk. Go back to a new HBO series, The Youngest Hope, and see what we think about that. So, without any further ado, I bring in this guy across the table who is warning me of all things flooding. That is President Zachary Taylor.
I'm just doing my part as a citizen and trying to help you out as best as possible.
Hey, you know what? I am so tired of rain right now.
Yeah, I kind of am too. I'm kind of tired of rain. I'm tired of it getting dark early as well. I can't wait till daylight savings time. I know that we spring forward and lose an hour of sleep, but it's worth it.
Well, you know, like, it's already pretty much spring anyway. You know, sometimes it's nice for it to be a little cold outside and get to, you know, just have a little bit of cold weather and have a nice blanket and watch some movies. No, that pretty much didn't happen this
year. No, it pretty much, well, just wait until opening weekend of baseball.
Yeah, you're right.
Because as soon as opening weekend of baseball and softball goes on, it'll be 30-something degrees and the wind will be insane and it'll all be back to normal.
Oh, good.
Be good for you.
Good, yeah. But no, it is, you know, storming outside. It is storming in Houston. I wake up to the friend of the show, Colin Deaver from KAGS, tweeting about driving into Houston last night to fly out on an aeroplane and going through all the flooding. We saw a picture of Rice's Stadium you showed me. Almost completely flooded. It's Houston's biggest public pool.
Well, you know, Houston's not that far above sea level, if it is above sea level. And so I'm not for sure why people were like, hey, you know what, this is a great place. Actually, I think initially what it was is everybody built at Galveston, and then they found out, hey, hurricanes blow through here. Why don't we move things a little bit more inland? And then they founded Houston, and Houston is where it's at now.
And that's your Houston history lesson with Zach Taylor.
I was giving people updates. I'm pretty sure that's exactly how it happened, because Galveston originally was rivaling New York City as the biggest port in America. And then the hurricane of 1905 or 8 or whatever came and, you know, kind of did some damage. And people were like, maybe we should take this party a little further inland. So then Houston got real big after that.
There you go.
Letting you know. Well, you're from Dallas. I just didn't know if you knew that much about Houston.
I mean, you know, I vaguely heard of this place you call Houston.
Houston.
And I'm glad you filled me in on all of that.
You're welcome. You are welcome.
So we have an A&M basketball team here that, you know, just can't really seem to help itself very much.
Well, they can't gain any traction. Anytime it looks like they're about to, they slip backwards. It's like taking one step forward and two steps back.
Sure.
And we were talking about this, in case folks didn't watch it last night or were not at the game last night or listened to the game last night, 62-60, Arkansas came back from a 12-point deficit and ended up beating Texas A&M. And we were talking about this. You know, what the Aggies have really been struggling with is turnovers and shooting from the free throw line. And they did both of those things pretty well last night.
Yeah,
fairly well.
12 turnovers.
Which still isn't great, but it's better.
Exactly. Billy Kennedy said after the, was it the LSU game? I think it was the LSU game, that 12 turnovers or less is where he wants them to be.
Yeah. Yeah.
So 12 turnovers that's the upper mark in the turnover spectrum, but it's where he wants them to be. And 16 for 19 at the free throw line is that's all you can really ask for.
And getting to the line, that's a big part of it too.
Sure.
I mean, obviously in order to shoot well from the line, you have to have your chances. And they did. They got to the line plenty of times last night, but in the end things did not work out for them.
Right, right. I mean, and you mentioned it, you brought it up a little bit in our talks here. I mean, you got to find a point guard, because, you know, Chris Collins can step in and do his job sometimes, but he got into foul trouble last night very early, ended up fouling out. And because you can't really point at, oh, well, you know, you get late in the game and there was a lot of turnovers and that's what caused the 12-point. Well, no, there really wasn't a lot of turnovers. What it really seemed to be is kind of an inability to completely set the play up, and then they have to go through the play a couple of times, then you're getting late in the shot clock, and you kind of just have to heave up a shot that isn't great shot selection because you're kind of in desperation mode, and then you turn the... I mean, they get a defensive rebound, which in essence, in that situation, is the same thing as a turnover.
Yeah, and when you're looking at this team, Billy Kennedy has been able to make do over the past couple of seasons with bringing in senior or graduate senior transfers at point guard. And that's what he was planning on doing with J.C. Hampton, much the way that he did with Collins last year. In the end, it's not working out for him. J.C. Hampton is a good guy, it seems like, and it seems like he's a good leader on that team. But from the point guard perspective, he's making mistakes that you wouldn't expect a fifth-year senior to make. So when your back's up against the wall in that situation, you got to put a guy in Chris Collins who's in there who is not battle-tested when it comes to actual game playing time. I mean, he's been with the team for several years. He's gotten plenty of practice. But the problem is that doesn't always equate well to game time. Guys can practice well, but doesn't mean they're going to play well whenever the buzzer sounds. So that, to me, seems like it's going to be a problem. It's been a problem, really, for the past couple of seasons, and that A&M has not been able to develop that point guard position. They had Alex Robinson, who was from the Arlington area, was a highly talented recruit. He's now gone. By the way, last I checked, he was leading TCU in scoring, and TCU is having a resurgence, and they're doing pretty dang good. And also, you got a guy in J.J. Caldwell who he brought in, but he is ineligible this year. So that seemed to be or was going to be the fix. Instead, you have to kind of put a Band-Aid over this big gaping wound, and it's not working out too well. There's a lot of leaks.
Yeah, you know, there was a lot of talk at the last media availability for Billy Kennedy and his players about if they, they made a good run in the tournament last year. If they still have NCAA tournament aspirations on their mind, sitting where they are in SEC play now at, is it 1-5 now?
Mm-hmm.
1-5. And all of them said, I mean, yeah, if we can really turn this thing around and basically win a whole bunch of games, yeah, I mean, that's totally still in our sights. And I don't even think that's a pipe dream now.
No, I don't think it is. And whenever they were talking about that, they were basically saying, we have to run the table. We have to run the table, and we have to either win or at least be in the championship of the SEC tournament. And none of that's going to happen right now, obviously. They're not going to run the table. They lost. And even if they run the table from here on out, gosh, that's a lot. That is a lot to have to do. And from what we've seen, it's just not going to happen. And then you look at the non-conference, what kind of big wins do they have? Virginia Tech is their best win.
Mm-hmm.
And Raw Tech is 2-3 in ACC play. So when you look at it from that perspective, it just does not seem like A&M has the resume in order to do it. And obviously, maybe for legitimate reasons, maybe not, the committee doesn't always look fondly on the SEC. Other than Kentucky, there really isn't a whole heck of a lot there. Florida's getting better, obviously. Florida's been great over the past several seasons with Billy Donovan, and it's starting to have a resurgence with Michael White. You look at South Carolina under Frank Martin, they're good as well. Those, to me, will be the three teams that end up going in. Will be Kentucky, Florida, and South Carolina, unless something tragic happens.
Mm-hmm.
But for A&M, I think right now you gotta play your butts off to get in the NIT right now, because at 1-5 in the SEC play, and yeah, you could say Mississippi State's getting better. They are. Ben Hallen's a good coach. You could say that Tennessee's getting better. Rick Barnes is a good coach. But all in all, 1-5 in the SEC is not a good look at all.
Well, and if you look again at last night, we go back, going back to talking about the point guard play. Tyler Davis only takes 5 shots,
mm-hmm.
which I something that I have argued from the get go, and I know it's to various different kinds of critique, but everything needs to go through Tyler Davis on that offense, or Robert Williams, but. You really don't, other than DJ Hogue, you really don't have a consistent outside shooting. Adam Gilder every now and then can step up and be a consistent outside shooter, but
And you say consistent. I mean, if you're looking at some statistics from last night, DJ was 2 of 12 from the field, 1 of 6 from beyond the arc.
Right.
He finished with 10 points. But...
Oh, it certainly was a cold night for everyone but Gilder.
It's been inconsistent at times for Hoke. And that's a guy who... And we'll talk with DJ here in a minute. That's a guy who you have to lean on very, very heavily, obviously. Mm-hmm. And he knows that. He knew that coming into this season. And so did Tyler Davis. He knew that this team was going to have to be on their backs in order for them to take it somewhere. But it's been inconsistent. And frankly, I think that teams are just honing in on Davis. You could say, well, there's no reason why he should only get five shots. But how often does he have a look? How often can he make something happen? I mean, he still scored 14 points last night, pulled down seven rebounds. But at the same time, teams can just focus in on him. They can double team him down low. And if you're not going to be making shots from the outside, if you're not going to be having some other guys step up, there isn't a whole heck of a lot can be done about it.
Yeah. Okay. So also in regards to just some of the players in the team this year, I'm curious to pick your brain on what you think about this this Robert Williams cat that they've pulled in, first year true freshman playing, because it kind of, I'm going to go ahead and throw it there, that it kind of surprised me that this guy is getting lottery to mid first round draft grades, yeah, should he go out this year. And I can see the raw talent. I mean, you look at some of these alley-oops that they have designed for him where he goes and basically his chest is at the height of the rim.
Right.
And he is blocking shots like it's nobody's business. But usually when you see these one-and-done guys that are projected to go that high in the draft, they're more complete players. I see parts of his game that translate to an NBA level right now. But he missed a lot of layups last night.
Yeah.
And usually with these one-and-done players, you don't see a lot of missed layups.
Well, when you're looking at it, you obviously see the intangibles. You see the diamond in the rough, so to speak. And that's been very evident. I think he's been really one of the few positives this season so far for Texas A&M has been the emergence of Robert Williams. I don't think that really comes as a surprise to anybody. Whether or not he's a one and done, I really don't know. I think he could use another year in college. I think he could use another year to polish up and would be maybe even a higher pick. I haven't really paid very close attention to the projections and things like that, but you can definitely see the raw talent that he has, just the sheer size, the athletic ability. And this is a guy, we were talking about this, I guess with last night with somebody, we were talking about Aggie men's basketball, and Robert is a physical specimen as well. You're talking about a wingspan of, what, 7'4", something like that. I mean, he's like a condor out there. And also, the dude takes his shirt off, and there's not really any fat to be found on him. I mean, Tyler Davis came in, and Tyler was big, Tyler was strong, but Tyler wasn't just cut. Robert Williams, there's hardly an inch of fat on him. So he's already physically there. But mentally and tools-wise, or he's got the tools, but maybe polishing his game, I think it could use another year. That being said, that's all up to Robert Williams, whether or not he wants to come back. Also, you could say the same thing about Tyler Davis, whether or not he's going to come back.
It's just an interesting case study, because I don't know if I've ever seen a guy, like I said, who didn't just demonstrate a full, complete, balanced game. But getting that those kind of projections and that kind of rumblings. But like I said, and like you said, I think it's all there. I think the talent is all there. It just needs to be polished a little bit. Last thought before we move on to Mr. Hogue, what'd you think about those uniforms last night?
I like them. I like the throwback stuff. I think that simple is best. And that obviously is what it was. So taking it back to the old G. Raleigh White days were the Aggies last night. And I think it was really cool.
I think that they should just wear those instead of their normal uniforms. They were great.
Yeah.
Those were solid.
And baseball also, obviously, baseball is going to be coming up here pretty soon. They also are going to be featuring some throwback unis.
Nothing is better in life than a good baseball throwback.
No.
Just a thing of beauty. Well, that's a little bit of basketball talk, because we solve all of the men's basketball problems one week at a time.
Score more points than the other team.
There you go. There it is on the My Aggie Nation podcast. But next, we pull two chairs aside and have a nice little sit-down one-on-one with Mr. DJ Hogue, forward for the Texas Aggies, here on the My Aggie Nation podcast.
Welcome back to the My Aggie Nation podcast. Zach Taylor alongside Travis Brown. And joining us, special guest, we got Texas A&M basketball player DJ Hogue. DJ, know you're from the Dallas area, and Travis is obviously from the Dallas area. So you guys are basically best friends already, which is a plus. So being from the DFW area, I guess we got to ask about the Cowboys, right? We can't just completely. Are you a Cowboys fan? I don't know if you even watched. Did you watch the game?
No, we had practice, so I didn't get to watch it till about 3 minutes left in the game. But I am a Cowboys fan, yes, sir.
Till the very end, whenever he can see them lose, so that's a bad part.
Was it Dak or is it Romo?
Oh, I prefer Dak.
Yeah.
I think most people do too. For some weird reason, people kept going on Twitter saying they wanted Romo in. He can't play defense, so I don't know why they wanted that. You know, coming into this year, being your sophomore year and everything, I know a lot's been put on your shoulders because you guys had a lot of seniors last year, obviously, and so all of a sudden. Hard to believe, but as a sophomore, you're already a veteran for this squad. So how did you feel about that coming into this year?
We were looking forward to it. Came here knowing, playing behind seniors, knew we had a whole year to put in work and be ready for sophomore campaign. So, I mean, it's been all right so far, struggling in SEC, but, I mean, we have our heads up. We're not too down about it. We believe we can bounce back.
Kind of an up-and-down thing with you guys. So what do you do personally? Do you try and stay even keel no matter what? What do you do if maybe you're struggling a little bit, either you personally or just as a team? What are you trying to do?
Yeah, you got to stay even keel. You can't get down on yourself. I mean, at any point in the game, you can start making shots. But mainly for us, it's been turnovers. So we just been trying to focus on that. And you got to stay positive when it comes to turnovers. You just got to be ball tough, though, and take care of the ball. It's more mental and decision-making versus can't get all flustered and put too much pressure on yourself because that's when you start turning the ball over.
You know, you hear a lot of really great shooters from any level talk about, well, I put up this many shots. I go to the gym this much. As one of the pure shooters on the team, how many shots do you think you get up each week? And kind of what's your shooting routine to kind of make sure you keep that continuity and that flow each week?
Preseason, I would get in the gym every morning. Probably make about 300 shots every day, something like that. And then after practice now, it's more trying to keep your body fresh. And so I probably try to get around 100 three makes or mid-range, some free throws too, in before or after practice with the managers.
Mm-hmm. Is there any kind of routine that you go through, like shooting around the world or getting close and moving back? Do you have something that you do to kind of keep that continuity?
I usually start in the middle, right around the free throw area, maybe a little back a little bit, a couple mid-range, about 25, and then get to dribble pull-ups and threes. Hit try to five or seven spots, corner, wings, slots, top.
Spending all that time in the gym, though, you got to be listening to a little bit of music, right? I mean, you're not just going to go in there and just be shooting the whole time. What are you listening to?
Drake, Future.
Okay.
Yeah, Bryson Tiller.
Okay.
Yeah. All right, I didn't know R&B, rap type stuff. Am I right? Am I good on this?
I
know Drake. I recognize. I know that they were talking. What was it, Texags the other day? Put a thing about them coming to town. I think it was Milos. I'm not for sure, but
Migos.
I know who Migos. Yeah, him too.
You old man.
Oh, dude, I'm
you
telling
old,
you, man.
Old man.
Yeah, I listen to way
well,
too much.
I'm gonna rescue this interview real quick, and I'm gonna ask, what do you have any like pregame superstitions? Do you have when you're in the locker room before the game? Was there you put the uniform on the same way? Do you listen to the same song? What does that kind of pregame look like for you?
I don't really. If anything, just. I get my right ankle tape first, and then my left second. Right sock first, left second, and then right shoe, left shoe.
Just like any other man, he gets his shoes taped right foot first and left foot. That's what I'm saying.
DJ Hogue's just like us, except 6 inches taller and athletic.
And
so
he's
got that going.
Turnovers have been a little bit of an issue with the team this year, and Coach has talked about kind of doing things a little bit differently in practice. What does that kind of look like for you? And it seems like things are taking a little bit of an uptick in the last two games with that.
Yeah, I mean, we've been trying to – the walk-ons and second string have been working on fouling us more and pressuring us more in practice so we could get used to playing, like, more physical than what the game will be. So when the game comes, we're not sped up like how we have been. So we've been working on that. It's more on us now. The coaches can't do too much. We just got to take care of the ball and get it to each other in the spots when we're there.
And Coach brought up that you guys have pretty much gone through the hardest phase of your schedule so far. You're playing so many games on the road against so many tough teams, so it's got to be nice to come back home and I wouldn't say make it easier. It's not going to be an easy schedule, but at least have a few more home games where you're on your home court.
Oh, yeah, most definitely. We started out Tennessee, they're one of the better teams in the SEC, then to Kentucky, and then at South Carolina. So, I mean, those were three big games. We fell short in all three. But now we got Arkansas at home. So, I mean, it's a must-win for us.
If you weren't playing basketball, but you could play any other sport, what sport would that be? What's your next favorite sport?
I don't know.
He said football. He's a wiry guy. He's a tall guy. He could be a good receiver, right?
Did you play football at?
I played in middle school, I quit my eighth grade year because I knew basketball was my sport.
Yeah. Okay. What position did you play?
A quarterback and linebacker.
Okay. Nice. Okay. What's your favorite sport to watch other than basketball?
Football. I play a lot of FIFA.
Okay. Cool. And so are you all Dallas teams across the board, or is there other teams out there for other sports that you follow as well?
I like the Warriors. I like the Lakers. Mavs. I like the Mavs too. Yeah, but they're struggling right now, so it's tough to watch.
Grip a big Dirk fan.
Yeah, he's getting old though, but I still love his game.
Hey man, he put up 17 points last night. That was good for second on the team.
He had like one turnaround, one legged fader.
Yeah.
So there's still like a glimmer of that. I mean, is that kind of one of the guys that you? Who are some of the guys that you kind of idolized growing up?
My favorite player always has been Kobe Bryant. And then, but now I love KD and Steph Curry, just the way they shoot the ball and play so fluently. I'm also a big D Book fan. His came in the league so quick and just put up numbers. It's like if you work hard, anybody can do it.
So as a guy playing with dudes like Tyler, obviously, and Robert, even though he's a freshman, that's a big guy right there. So what's it like playing with those guys, the big guys up there under the basket, throwing down dunks all the time?
It's fun. I mean, and they help a lot. Tyler, big body, big presence, demands double team. Rob, block shots, dunks, everything. I mean, any rebound, he can go get it. So it's great playing with them. They help a lot.
How many times have y'all watched that dunk from the Mississippi, the alley-oop? Because it looked like he was going up and going up and going up and going up. Was that something that y'all kind of gone back and seen the highlight of a little bit and maybe kind of analyzed a little bit?
Yeah, me and Rob, we watched it a couple times. He showed me a picture of it, too, like when he was at the top of the jump. I mean, it looked like, like his whole just chest was at the rim, almost.
We won't say in a fight. We'll say a pillow fight. Pillow fight between Tyler Davis and Robert Williams. Who wins?
I don't know.
Robert's got the reach, man.
Robert's arms are so long, but Tyler looks like he can just eat a bunch of pillows.
That's awesome. So, do you have any hobbies? Is there anything that it's hidden talents that the Aggie Nation might not know about? You big singer, dancer? Can you play any instruments or anything like that?
I'm a solid ping pong player.
Ooh. There's a lot
like
of,
Shane Bouchel.
We need a DJ Trevor Knight ping pong battle.
Is Trevor pretty good at ping
Trevor
pong?
Trevor was talking some ping pong smack before the season. So I don't know. Have you played a bunch of ping pong with?
I haven't played lately, but I used to play at my friend's house when I was in high school, and he always used to kill me. He's amazing. He goes to Cal Poly, but I mean, so.
I just do the backhand the entire time. I can't.
I got a mean serve. I'm just saying. I got a mean serve. I'm a baseball guy. You had to play a lot of ping pong and hand-eye coordination and stuff like that.
Put a lot of spin on it.
Yeah.
And DJ, I know you guys have been talking, even now, sitting at 1-4 in the SEC, but you're still looking towards that NCAA tournament. You guys were there last year, made all the way to the Sweet 16, and I know that's something that you guys are wanting to reach again this year. So how much do you talk about that throughout the season?
Right now, we're focused on Arkansas, but if we bounce back and we can get there, I think we can make a deep run. We have a lot of matchup problems, especially when we buckle down and really focus. We got a lot of good players, and when we all play well, I think we're the top team in the country. That's just the thing. We got to take care of the ball and then play well together, and then we'll be all right.
What was that like for you as such a young player to walk on that court at Oklahoma City? And I'm sure you grew up watching that every year and kind of then now being a part of it. What was that like?
It was an amazing experience, especially the you and I comeback. I mean, that was the craziest thing I've been a part of. I was front row seat to watch it, pretty much. Got in like second overtime when Jalen fouled out. But I mean, watching it, just I was sitting, me and Tyler sitting on the bench praying, hoping. Like we believed the whole time, and we was cheering for him, getting it. And then once it came closer and closer, it was like, wow, like we can do it.
When did you actually realize that like this is, you know, this could happen in that run?
Crusoe got the and one layup. I was like, wow, like we got the momentum. They're back on their heels. It's us.
Well, guys, that's going to wrap it up with DJ Hogue. Appreciate it to DJ for coming on with us. I know he's just got off practice, so he's all sweaty and ready to go take a shower, but we do appreciate him coming on. And, guys, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll continue this thing rolling, getting you to listen to My Aggie Nation podcast.
The My Aggie Nation podcast, Zach Taylor alongside Travis Brown. It is our show critic edition of the My Aggie Nation podcast, as we are prone to do. We have our shows that we like to watch, our HBO series, Game of Thrones.
Because if we're not watching sports, we're watching HBO.
Yeah, if we're not watching sports, we're definitely not playing sports. We were talking about this earlier. We're both members of the Planet here in town, the old Planet Fitness. Setting off lunk alarms every day, all day, every day. And you're a big fan because you're a card-carrying member. You're the platinum member.
I'm a black card member.
You're a black card member.
And nothing has worked in the getting me to go to the gym spectrum like having the massage chair to go sit in afterwards, because I want to go sit in that massage chair. And I've made kind of a rule for myself that in order to go sit in the massage chair, you have to actually like physically exert yourself first. You have to have a reason go sit in the massage chair. And you know what? I want to go sit in that massage chair, so it's worked.
It's a reward for you.
I mean,
it's like a little ribbon you
I set workout goals, and my workout goals is massage chair.
See, I'm just a regular working stiff. I got my regular old card. I go in, I punch my time clock, I do my five pound dumbbells, and then I leave.
Wearing like your little, cut off shirt on the sides with your sports bra.
Yeah, but you're not supposed to do that in Planet Fitness. And especially the women that show way too much shoulder. I'm not saying that I have, but I may have mentioned something to the people that work there. Be like, hey, she doesn't need to be wearing that. She needs to chiggity check herself before she wrecks herself.
As you're wearing your sleeveless cut-off t-shirt with your sports bra as well?
Yeah, exactly. That's what it is. Yeah. And no,
you're just jealous.
Why on earth would I ever rat a woman out for that?
Jealous because she looks better than you in her...
But we know a lot of people that are members of the Planet.
Yeah.
Olin Buchanan of TxAgs is a member of the Planet.
Vince Warneman.
Stephen McGee, former Texas A&M quarterback, is a member of the Planet.
And, of course, the president of Planet Fitness, Rich Kroom.
Richard Kroom is a fan of the Planet. So, and we were just talking about this, too, in that whenever you initially go to the gym, well... You got a membership for Christmas, right? And
yeah.
So whenever you went, everybody was out of school, and the students weren't in town.
No, it was great because I thought like this is the best gym I've ever been in. It's so clean, it's quiet. There's not a whole lot of people in here, you know. Because I usually go around it's later. It's 7:30 to 8:00. Actually, I've timed it. Usually, if there is a Stars game on, I'm usually going to be at Planet Fitness because I can stream it on my phone. So I'll go and I'll run the elliptical for a while and watch the game, and then during the intermission go do some lifting and then come back and do some more cardio while the game is going on.
Don't they have TV? They've got TVs
over there.
It's not like I ever go over there and do cardio. I'm not the cardio guy, but yeah. I think there are TVs over by
There are TVs, but they don't have Fox Sports Southwest on it, so I'm watching the Stars game. But yeah, it was great. It was great. And I went a couple times after Christmas, and that was – fantastic too, just a great experience. And then I went Monday for the first time, and they're back. All the students are back. All of all 40 of them are over in the corner where the dumbbells are.
We're gonna need a bigger gym.
And I'm just over there trying to do some curl and presses, and I'm scared I'm going to, you know, swing a dumbbell and hit a girl who's, you know, doing some rows next to me or something like that.
Back off me, bro. All right, and I've had this experience when I've gone to the Planet. You're over there by the dumbbells, and the girls are over back behind it doing, like, yoga and stuff. They're doing, like, stretching exercises.
I didn't see that. There was one girl who had, you know, they have, like, the their bars, but with, like, the weights that are just, like, permanently affixed to it, mm-hmm. like, small weights, you know? They're like long dumbbells,
barbells.
Basically.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. Yeah, I guess that's what they are. Had one of those over her shoulder, like she was doing a squat, but then was doing lunges, like from one end of the Planet Fitness to the other.
Oh, she was doing the walk-in lunges.
Yeah, the walk-in lunges.
Wasn't the in-place lunges.
No, and that was a little bit dangerous.
Excuse me, ma'am, I would appreciate it if you just kind of stayed over in your section, and we'll stay over here.
I mean, to her credit, do you go to the College Station one?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
There's really, if you wanted to do the walking lunges, there's not lunge area very much in...
Well, why don't you just do in-place lunges or just do squats?
You can't really do
I do in-place lunges.
You can't really do the twist with the in-place
lunge. Just hold a dumbbell and then you do the little walking man thing.
Now, I tell you what, since this has totally just turned into a workout segment.
Yeah, because we're big-time workout fiends.
Because we're meathead lunks. The stretching machines. That's something that seemed so old man back, you know, like in my college athlete days. Why would you need a stretching machine? But I tell you what, man, stretching, that was great. Have you ever used one of those stretching machines?
No, I don't even know what these things
look
like.
So back in, like, the back room where there's
like,
oh, I
never go back there. The abs,
yeah,
the abs are stretching. No, I never go back to the abs.
So they have these things that kind of look like, I don't know, man. They look kind of like massage chairs, but with, not like the massage chairs they have, but like the ones where you lay with your face up against it, but with like a handlebar on the front of it. And you can, like, put your feet and your grip in different positions, and the chair, like, goes backwards, away from the handlebars. And so your body, your arms stay put, and your body goes back. You can stretch out your back. You can stretch out your hamstrings. You can say, oh, man. It was
so
it was
you
glorious.
Lay face down on this
no,
contraption.
No, no. You put your knees on this, like, board, and then you sit on, like, a bicycle seat, and there's, like, a handlebar in front of you. And then as you lean your body back... Your hands stay in place, and then like stretches out your back or your hand. It's great.
Maybe I go to the bench press and dumbbells. That's about it.
And just
and then I'm done.
And
I'm done.
Grunt and throw your weights across.
Yeah,
the room.
Grunt, throw my weights around. Skip leg day.
Purpose
all day every day.
Purposely set off the lunk alarm.
Like I did it. Yes. Now I have dropped accidentally. I have dropped weights before. Like if you got a dumbbell and I'll put it on a bench and it'll roll off or something if I don't have it steady. But the lunk alarm never goes off for me, so I really am.
I just kind of glance over your way and go, "No, that was a mistake."
Yeah, exactly.
Well, you know, we started this segment to talk about the youngest Pope.
We started talking about our TV and then our workout regimens and different things.
This is how the My Aggie Nation podcast typically works.
It's how we morphed ourselves.
Yeah, so we have the show called The Youngest Pope that's coming on that came on. You know, kind of fills that void of Westworld, which was one of our favorites here recently. And I don't know if I've been more excited about a show coming on.
You were really excited about this
than
show.
Than The Youngest Pope.
I wasn't nearly as excited as you, and that's probably why I have a different takeaway than you do.
Yeah, so for background, the show is about the Pope, but a new Pope is elected through the conclave and of cardinals, and he is like 42, and it's Jude Law, it's played by Jude Law, and it's quickly evident. We don't know the circumstances by which he was elected. We don't know really anything about him other than it starts on his first day as being the Pope. And we slowly come to realize that the idea of what we think of as the Pope, this kind of, you know, reverent
almost
head
divine.
Of the church, almost divine head of the church, that's not this person. He's kind of a jerk. And he kind of is a little self-centered and, you know, a little all over the place with that. And so it's kind of and ultimately in these there's been two episodes. Ultimately, it kind of trickles out that maybe he doesn't actually even believe in God.
Wait, there's two episodes?
Yeah. Another one came out on Tuesday.
What?
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know it was going to be like a miniseries.
I'm going to ruin your day.
Yeah. I didn't watch last night's.
Oh, well,
obviously I wasn't in town, and I did not know.
I guess it was Sunday and Monday. Yeah.
Oh, now that you say something, I thought maybe my roommate had missed out on Sunday night's premiere and decided to re-record it.
Mm-hmm. No.
Interesting. Okay.
Yeah, I think that's how the whole season's going to go. It's going to be Sunday, Monday, Sunday, Monday,
Interesting.
Sunday.
Interesting. Yeah. Okay. Well, I did see the first episode. I haven't seen the second episode yet. It was hard to follow. It was weird. And typically, I do like the weird kind of, it was kind of dream sequences at times, you know, kind of where it's a, not an alternate universe or reality, but it's like he's daydreaming. Mm-hmm. And sometimes you don't know it. It'll play out a scene and then, oh. BT Dub, he was daydreaming. That mm-hmm. didn't actually happen. That happened once or twice, I think, in the first episode. Mm-hmm. It doesn't show how he came to be elected,
but there's rumblings that there was. It's very political in the Vatican, and well, for this process that's supposed to be, you know, just the guidance of the Holy Spirit. And God's will the veil kind of seems to be pulled back in the show to where it's actually just very political.
Yeah.
But it seems like there was some kind of coup that got him elected, but we don't really know quite what it is.
Who was behind it? Who was backing it? He's also got several cardinals around him. I know one, I can't remember what the guy's name is, actually the show. The character's name, but he's looking to take over, possibly.
The Secretary of State?
Right.
Yes.
Yeah. And whether or not, because I'm not Catholic, you're not Catholic, so I don't know. I know that you studied religion quite a bit in college, and I don't know if that is necessarily the way that things work. The hierarchy and everything else within the Vatican, I don't know about. Like I didn't even know they had a Secretary of State. I mm-hmm. thought that was just America.
Well, and it's interesting because it does work like this. I mean, the Vatican City is a city state. It not only is it the head of the Catholic Church and its own kind of church and hierarchy within that church and
it's
that building.
Its own country.
It's basically its own country.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, I mean, because in the second episode, it's just this great scene, just this outstanding scene where the Pope, they bring in the kind of head of marketing for the Vatican, and she's like, we need to go get your picture taken to put on all of these plates and, you know, T-shirts and everything, because most of the money in the Vatican is made from tourists buying things with the Pope's picture on it. And she goes through this whole plan, and he steps aside and he goes back and gets a blank plate, and he's like, this is the only kind of plate that I feel comfortable authorizing. And she said, well, there's no, your picture's not on it. And he goes through this whole script of asking her and the Secretary of State, who is the best author in the last 20 years? Or who is the most important author of the last 20 years? Not the best, because that is, you know, for the vain. Who's the most important? He said, Salinger. And they go through all these, an artist or whatever. And the funniest is, who is the best electronic music group of recent time? And they say, well, I don't listen to that. And he kind of scoffs and says, Daft Punk. And he said, do you know why? Well, first, it's just funny to hear the Pope say Daft Punk.
Yeah.
But he says why, and it's because all of these people don't share their identity. And because they don't share their identity, they become something larger than what they are. Because people, there's a mystery there.
Like when Johnny Manziel couldn't speak to the media his freshman year.
Way to bring it home, Zach.
Yeah.
Way to bring it home.
Now we've come full circle.
So, yeah, and so the Secretary of State says, but you're not just the Pope, you're not a rock star, you're a head of state. And so, long story short, it's almost like being a president or a prime minister or something like that.
And by the way, for those who haven't seen the previews for it or haven't watched it yet, Jude Law is the Pope, mm-hmm. but he's an American Pope.
Mm-hmm.
And he also brings in a lady. He was an orphan whenever he was a boy, and he brings in a sister, a nun, who raised him in the orphanage. And he basically brings her in to be his right hand. And mm-hmm. she's kind of conniving, too, mm-hmm. a lot like he is.
That's the whole kind of premise of all of this stuff, is that it's supposed to be this this organization that's so reverent and pure in kind of the way you think about it, and basically you hate everyone on the show.
Yeah, and Diane Keaton, by the way, is Sister Mary. Yeah,
yeah. And so it's interesting. I have my theories about what it's all going to be. I think it's a little too early maybe to share those. Let people go out there and check it out. But I think that I enjoy it. Now, I'm a theological church history nerd. I was a religion minor in college, and so I'm really getting into it and everything like that. It'll be interesting to see if you hang tight on it. Maybe we'll have a checkup here in a month or two and see where we are.
I'll just have to watch the second episode.
Yeah.
I was just kind of lost. I was kind of...
Things iron out a little bit
now,
more.
Now, that being said, I do have a show that I'm quite interested in. The second episode was last night. I had to go out of town for work. I came back. I wasn't able to watch it. Taboo. Have you seen Taboo with Tom Hardy?
No.
I was very intrigued after the first episode. I think you would really
so
like
it. So there's two. There's that show and there's that Legion show that I'm kind of all kind of coming
like
out
the
same
mutants.
Time, and I'm trying to get confused. Tell me the plot.
The plot. Okay. So an older man dies. Did we not talk about this? I thought we talked about this last week.
I think we talked about it at the bowl, not on the podcast.
Oh, okay. So it goes back to 1800s England. And in London, and a man dies. He was a merchant. He was a ship merchant.
Wait, a man goes back in time in 1800s England.
What? No.
Are you sure this isn't Doctor Who?
It starts in 1800s England. We have to set the
oh,
scene.
Oh, okay, okay.
Starts in foggy England, and a man has died. He was a ship merchant. He was quite wealthy, and he dies. His son, long thought to be dead, returns. And he has been spending all this time. He was working for the East India Trading Company and had spent all this time in Africa. He's got tattoos, tribal tattoos. He's basically been living with the natives in Africa. And he has now come back. And initially, all of this merchant's holdings were going to go to his daughter, who is played by actually Charlie Chaplin's granddaughter.
And boy, she's waiting there for you.
And she's gorgeous. And she was in Game of Thrones, by the way. She was Robb Stark's wife.
That's Charlie Chaplin's daughter?
Granddaughter.
Granddaughter?
Yeah. Her great-granddaughter.
Robb Stark's wife. Oh, her.
Yeah, the one who died at the... Well, everybody died at the Red Wedding. Anyways, so she's playing Tom Hardy's sister. And apparently there had been some kind of love thing going on between Tom Hardy and his sister. At least that's kind of what I was picking up. Whether or not that was actually true, I haven't watched the second episode yet, so we'll find out. I'll watch it tonight. But initially, all this merchant's holdings were going to go to his daughter and her husband, who was then going to sell it to the crown and to the East India Company. Well, Tom Hardy shows up, throw a wrench in that bad boy. So now everybody's wondering what the heck's going on. By the way, Tom Hardy is also very antisocial. And as I said, he's been living in Africa for quite some time. His father was thought to be crazy. They think that Tom Hardy's crazy, too. And he also gets, like, visions from dead people. So it's a little Sixth Sense meets... Sixth Sense meets Cry of the Beloved Country.
Okay,
not really, but
okay. Well, since we're breaking off on all kinds of shows, we'll wrap it up with this. I have like gotten into this reemergence of game shows that has kind of happened as of late.
Do you have the Game Show Network?
I do have the Game Show Network, but there's like old, because I used to watch the Game Show Network all the time when I was a little kid. Mm-hmm. Loved the Game Show Network when I was a kid. And a couple of the shows that were my favorites back then have, like, reemerged on broadcast television. I don't even know, like, I've only seen, like, a handful of commercials for them, so it's a surprise that I've discovered them. But The Match Game, did you ever watch The Match Game on Game Show Network?
No.
Has come back with Alec Baldwin as the host.
Well, I knew that, yeah.
And it's hilarious. It's extremely raunchy, but it is hilarious. Because, I mean, I also am a huge Alec Baldwin fan. Also, to tell the truth... An old show back where they have celebrities try. They have three people, you know, who pretend to be the same person who've done some kind of feat or something, and they have to ask them questions and guess which one is the real one and the other two are liars. And then not one that's a revival show, but, and I will admit it's extremely gimmicky. I mean, they like play on all the TV gimmicks and reality show gimmicks, but you can't not watch it.
Yeah.
And that is The Wall. Have you seen that's the show that's,
no,
that's
I haven't
been
seen that
it's LeBron James is an executive producer, and it's like the weirdest combination of game show tropes thrown together into one giant game show, but like it you can't look away. There you have a husband and a wife, and you know they all are either like a former they're a veteran or a police officer or someone who does a lot of charity. and they have to they get so much money to start out with because it's a giant Plinko board.
Okay.
With balls falling down it.
Yeah, now I know what you're
talking
about.
Then one of the spouses goes into isolation where she has to, that he or she has to answer questions, but she doesn't know if she got them right or wrong.
Yeah.
And then they have to bet however many balls they want to drop based on, they see the answers first, if they think they'll know it, and then the positioning on the board. And
I like Deal or No Deal. That sounds familiar.
It's very Deal or No Deal, but with like, I mean, let's be real. There's not much more drama than a Plinko board.
Yeah, well, this is true. And it does take some skill, believe it or not. You put a spin on it and stuff. What was the show? I don't know if it was on MTV or maybe it was on Spike back when we got Spike here in town. And it was a show in which a couple, one person would come out, the other person was in a different room. And they both knew that they were going to be on a game show. So this was the deal. One person would come out and be out in front of this big crowd, and the other person would just be in another room with somebody else. And they had video of the person that was in the room by themselves with somebody else. They had that on video, and the person would have to answer questions. But they thought the questions and things, it was basically about their spouse or their significant other. And the questions that they were answering, they thought it would either be like $5 or $10 or something like that. Meanwhile, the other person who's in this big game show room with this big crowd, this studio and the host, is watching all of this. But the things that the person by themselves are betting on are actually worth like $500 and $1,000.
Yeah.
So the stakes are much more raised. And I can't remember what the name of the show was. But
it's kind
of
like that. Now, the most fascinating part about the whole show, to kind of wrap this up, is that at the end of it, they've dropped green balls, that if it's a green ball, it's positive money, and if you miss the question, the balls are red, and it takes away, and there's a certain number of green balls you just get to drop no matter what, and then there's red balls at the end, and so there's this constant going up and going down of money. And at the before they drop the last four red balls, they send a contract, like Deal or No Deal kind of, to the person in isolation that says, You're guaranteed the money you got from the first round plus $20,000 for each question you answered correctly. They don't know if they answered it correctly or not.
Oh, okay.
They aren't told. So they either have to sign the contract and they're guaranteed, you know, $100,000 or whatever, about give or take, depending on what it is that they did. And they send that contract back out and they either sign it and they get that money, or they tear it up and it's whatever happened on the wall that they didn't see. So you have these situations where the wife comes back out because she's been in isolation, and the husband either made $1.3 million out there and she signed it because she knew that she didn't know how it went, and she knew that, well, we could do a lot with the hunt. So it's, and they have to like tell each other what they did, and it's like super gimmicky reality
TV. This sounds like a great way to start a breakup.
It's so funny because there's one episode where the wife tore up the contract, and in the last round the guy lost all of like $1.4 million.
Jeez.
And she said, well, no, I bet on you and I ripped it up. And he's like, well, I lost it all. And the host said, well, you know what, you came here and you didn't lose all it because you bet on each other, and that's what's important. And you're like, wait, well they bet on each other and they made no dollars. So, yeah.
You're a winner at life.
Well, that's what's going on our TVs right now, because it's football off season, and the A&M basketball team is not, you know, necessarily leaving much to want to watch. But guess what? Baseball season
right
is
around
on
the corner,
way.
Baby.
So that is something to look forward to, and also something to look forward to is next week's My Aggie Nation podcast, where we will probably get right square back into where that men's basketball team is, and who knows, maybe a little more TV talk. We want to thank DJ Hogue for stepping aside and having a lovely little conversation with us, and kind of getting into the brain of that Texas A&M basketball sophomore. I want to thank Zach Taylor.
I want to thank you, Travis,
for just sitting in this room with me every week. Well, this is the My Aggie Nation podcast. We will be back next week, as we are every week. So for Zach Taylor, I am Travis Brown, and we will see you next week.
It seems like every day, everything just has a way, the way it must have seems. But if we don't watch what we're doing, our hearts will get ruined by silly things. Good love ain't needs a girl, we know that's true. And if we wanna keep it, we gotta watch everything that we do, yeah, yeah. Don't wanna make sure my baby, make sure you're sticking with me. Don't wanna make sure that we'll be all that we can be, all that we can be.